Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north, left by King Maruta. Please repeat. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king.
Understanding the hearty wishes of the king.
His brothers. As advised by the infallible Lord Krishna.
As advised by the infallible Lord Krishna.
Collected sufficient riches from the north. Left by King Maruta.
Left by King Maruta.
So, Prabhus, welcome everybody. You came in late. Madan Mohan Prabhu is giving class this morning, and we need everybody to mute themselves at this time. If anybody who's on free conferencing needs to unmute themselves during the class, just go ahead and press star 6 and you'll be unmuted. So, Madan Mohan, give me 1 second here to cancel everybody out and leave you. Okay, hold on, just 1 second.
Well, here we are at a continuation where they had just heard about all the glories of Maharaj Parikshit, and now King Yudhisthira is asking now to continue on with the Rajasurya sacrifice. He wants to perform the sacrifice. And today's verse, he's asking his, his brothers were advised by Lord Krishna, but he's also they're understanding the hearty wishes of their brother, the king. So before we read the purport, it seems like that's an ordinary event. It's not very special that the brothers understood the king and was advised by Krishna, and now they're going to get sufficient riches. How to get that? So this, because it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it has all these other aspects. And one aspect I just wanted to mention in the beginning is because it's dealing with money here, that's the principle. I'm picking up a couple principles here. That the brothers, they understood the wishes of their brother, the king, Yudhisthira. And that's also nowadays even a little special, to understand someone else's desires and be dedicated to doing that. And then the other principle is how to deal with money, which in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a whole different concept than, for instance, Prabhupada would once say that a lot of yogis and different personalities demonstrating that they're very spiritual, someone would offer them money, they would take their hand and pull it next to their head saying, no, I don't need any money. I don't want any money. But yet, Prabhupada, he demonstrated the correct use of money. There's no alternative for this way for man, is to engage everything in Krishna's service. And he immediately, you gave him $1 million, the next day he would ask if you have any money, because the nature of a Brahmin is he doesn't keep anything for himself. He engages everything in service of the Lord. So I just thought that piece of contrast, because the impersonalists, they don't want money. And then persons who are envious, they'll also criticize if you are going to use money thinking it to be material. But for ISKCON, they could engage any amount of money in Krishna's service. So that always struck me as one of the tricks that the phonies put on them with either the impersonalists or the envious. They try to criticize on this point of money. So I'll go on for the purport here, and we'll get a glimpse into a time gone by of what culture was like. So the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Maruta, one of the great emperors of the world, imagine, a great emperor of the world. He ruled over the world long before the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was the son of Maharaj Aviksut and was a great devotee of the sun god known as Yamaraj. His brother, Samvarta, was a rival priest of the great Brihaspati, the learned priest of the demigods. He conducted one sacrifice called the Yajna, by which the Lord was so satisfied that he was pleased to hand over to him in charge the charge of a mountain peak of gold. This peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalayan mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. There's also some devotees that look for it. He was so powerful an emperor that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from higher planets like Indra, Chandra, Brihaspati used to visit his palace. And because he had a gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. The canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. In his daily performance of sacrificial ceremonies, some of the inhabitants of the Vayuloka air planets were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony, and the assembly of the demigods in the ceremony was led by Vishvadev. By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out all kinds of diseases from the jurisdiction of his kingdom. All the inhabitants of the higher planets like Devaloka, Pratiloka, were pleased with him for his great sacrificial ceremonies. Every day he used to give in charity to the learned Brahmins such things as bedding, seats, conveyances, and sufficient quantities of gold. Because of the magnificent charity and performance of innumerable sacrifices, the King of Heaven, Indradev, was fully satisfied with him and always wished for his welfare. Due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years, surrounded by satisfied subjects, ministers, legitimate wife, sons, and brothers. Even Lord Krishna praised his spirit of pious activities. He handed over his only daughter to Maharaj Angira, and by their good blessing, and by his good blessings, he was elevated to the kingdom of heaven. First of all, he wanted to offer the priesthood of his sacrifices to the learned Brihaspati, but the demigod refused to accept the post because of the king's being a human being, a man of this earth. He was very sorry for this, but on the advice of Narada Muni, he appointed Samvarta to the post, and he was successful in his mission. The success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden because there is no learned priest among the so-called Brahmins who go by the false notion of becoming sons of Brahmins without the minimal qualities. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended.
Madan Mohan, can I interrupt you for a minute? All of a sudden, your voice just dropped like anything. We can hardly hear anything. Can the rest of you hear him, or am I the only one?
No, I can't hear him either.
All of a sudden, when you started reading the last paragraph, it just dropped off.
Let me call you right back.
Okay.
There was a loud noise. A loud noise preceded him dropping out.
That's odd. Anyway, let's see.
Yeah, it was an electronic tone. Something happened.
Yeah. It must have been the last person in. Okay, who did it? Who was trying to get in, Ugolarasa? Who did you just try to meet? Pranati? Okay, let's see if I can find
it. Is it any better now?
Yeah, there
way
you
better.
Go. There you Perfect. Go. Would you mind reading the last paragraph again? I'm going to mute everybody. Just 1 second. I'm sorry. Okay, so go ahead, Madan.
All right. It's very, this last sentence is very significant. Prabhupada ties it all in for us. He says, in this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended. Sankirtan Yajna is inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Avyanata Mirandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksus Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jayatam Surito Pangur Amamanda Materkati Sarvasva Padambojo Radha Madana Mohano. So in this verse here, I wanted to just go on a little bit on how we're learning, why we're learning this. I was starting to think about it, and I noticed that there's an idea of consciously doing what we're doing. Conscious chanting, conscious Srimad Bhagavatam, catch hold of the consciousness and focus it. And like before you start something, to try to recognize what we're actually doing. So, of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we could say before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, the word for conquest is jayam, which means all that is meant for conquering. And then it says, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and the Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And of course, Prabhupada points it out that all the Vedic literatures and Puranas are meant for conquering. So now what is that, all that is meant to be conquered? The darkest regions of material existence. And then he explains what that is. The living being is in a state of forgetfulness of his relationship with God due to him being overly attached to material sense gratification from time immemorial. And this struggle for existence in the material world is perpetual, and it's not possible for him to get out of it by making plans. If he all wants to conquer this perpetual struggle for existence, he must reestablish his eternal relationship with God. So, of course, we know that's Bhagavatam 1, 2, 4. So, to bring us consciously, we're here today, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam under Srila Prabhupada's direction, reading Srimad Prabhupada's translation, and it's meant, we're doing it for a reason, to conquer the darkest regions of material existence. And what is that, which is our very means of conquest, is to recognize how to become free from this sense gratification, and otherwise we can't get out of the struggle for existence. So this particular point about wealth. If we think about wealth, everybody wants money in this world. We're anandamoya biasat. We're chips off the old block, so to speak. Krishna is anandamoya biasat. We're actually always looking for this happiness. However, just like here it says, overly attached to material sense gratification from time immemorial. So the focus of the Bhagavatam, the focus of sacrifice, We're hearing about sacrifice today. He's going to perform a sacrifice where he needed much wealth. So the money he was having or getting, it actually belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Isha Vaisha Dam Sarvam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Lord. So this principle of sacrifice, it's a little foreign to the Western mind, even though we understand it in the context, well, if you want a job, you may need to get an education, and the education, you have to give up some of your partying, but actually, in this country, they really don't give up partying. They actually almost major in that in school secondary. But anyway, the idea is still there of sacrifice, but sacrifice, they still want to party. Of course, Lord Chaitanya, he understood that, and he has the Sankirtan party where you actually do sing and dance, but it's a sacrifice. Instead of singing and dancing for your pleasure, you sing and dance for Krishna's pleasure. And that principle, I thought, would be, it's such an essential point of sacrifice or everything that we do. I think it's Hari Toshini, is that everything should be done, but it should be done for Krishna's happiness, for Krishna's satisfaction. And this knowledge that we're learning what would attract Krishna. Ultimately, in order to be successful in Krishna consciousness, we actually have to attract Krishna, which seems like an impossible idea to even think of. But all the knowledge that we're being given, if it isn't used for attracting Krishna, then it's more or less useless. There was a nice verse that was quoted in today's class. Pushkar gave the class earlier. He quoted this verse, and then after the word, I was talking to Keshava, and he's singing this verse over and over again. He likes the way it sounds. Of course, I may be able to remember a couple of the words, but perhaps one or two or all of you know this verse, but it says that tapasya that you may perform, if you don't become Krishna conscious by your tapasya, what was the value of it? And then it says, and if you are Krishna conscious, what's the value of doing tapasya? So it was, anybody know that verse? You could, I don't know if it's too complicated to unmute and say it, but anyway, that same principle is how to always be conscious that we're doing this, our mentality, which is explained to us by the process of surrender, that one has a certain humble state of mind, because Krishna has to be pleased. We're doing everything to please, well, Prabhupada, Krishna is representative, where Yasha Prashada, Bhagavat Prashado, to make there isn't any other way to make advancement other than pleasing. So we usually, this principle of doing something and then trying to please something, that's a universal principle. For instance, your senses, they require engagement, and they say, if you get this for me, I'll be happy. So you try to please your senses. However, they're not very good masters, so you're never really quite satisfied. You're actually agitated more, and you get more and more forgetful of Krishna. And that's one of the definitions of sin, is forgetfulness of Krishna. That's the Brahma Samhita Bhakti Siddhanta classifies sin as forgetfulness of Krishna. So you have to do something, and you have to do something for happiness because of your nature, but it doesn't give you the happiness. So you try harder, and the nature of sinful activity is it leaves a special kind of residue to have you do it over again and again and again and again, and that's your repetition of birth and death, because it never satisfies you. So Krishna, he says that he understands that problem. He says, if you want to be happy, you have to be happy by sacrifice. And then there's the whole third, fourth chapter. It talks about different types of sacrifice. And here we see in today's verse that he was so, he did so many sacrifices, and he did it so nicely. The king, Maharaj Maruta, that everybody was happy with him. The demigods were happy with him. Everybody was happy with him. Krishna was happy for his piety, how he did that. So he did it correctly, but we see that he was rewarded to go to heaven. And because of the wonderful condition that Srila Prabhupada gives us, the Siddhanta of everything, it doesn't have such a high value with us because being under Prabhupada's guidance. But so much of the Vedic literature, it was presented without the conclusion. So it was like the best thing going. If that's all you ever heard about, heaven sounds really good. You don't have any problems there. When your children are born, they grow up immediately, and you only get them right before you're ready to leave your body. There's no problems at all. It sounds very, very nice. Just like dharma, artha, kama, moksha, these things sound good if that's all you're ever told about. But because of the extreme good fortune of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, the Dipak succession, six Goswamis, Srila Prabhupada, we have a conclusion. And when you compare it to Lord Chaitanya, says Prema Pumarta Mohan, or what's that, Pancha Purush Sarta, that the fifth goal of life, it becomes actually a little bit not very interesting. It almost like something to avoid, because it's like a trap. We understand how Maya works as a trap to keep us from becoming pure in Krishna consciousness. She offers us different distractions, and we know that that distraction would be very difficult to overlook. So Krishna is very kind to us, most of us, by eliminating that possibility, so we don't get distracted. But here we're finding that Maharaj Yudhisthira, he'll have so much money at his disposal, but what's he going to do with it? What's he going to do? So that point, what are you going to do, is something that's very significant to each one of us, because all day long we have to do something. And some things produce a material effect, which will have you want to do them again. And we understood that there's, in trying to become free from the anarthas, we're starting to get the ability to see and understand that these things that our mind presents, that we've agreed with, that sound really good, are not actually good. And that internal understanding of that point is a very difficult thing to get, because even if you're told about it, it can't soak in. If there's some substance, our lack of surrender, that we learn how to hear it and not hear it at the same time. For instance, we were talking the other day about the four defects, illusion, mistakes, senses are imperfect, and a propensity to cheat. And in a couple places, Prabhupada explains more about them. And one of the ways that he explained illusion, he says it comes from inattention while hearing. So as we hear about giving up sense gratification, because of that 7530, the Griha Vrata, Ananta Gobir, Rishito Satova, that verse on if someone's made up their mind that they're going to be happy in this world, then even if they hear good instructions or there's rules or even by their own endeavor, they can't become pure in their Krishna conscious because of that chewing the chew. They're madly engaged in puna puna charvati charvidanam. So how to get to that spot to trigger the release of I don't actually want that. That's a rare thing that happens because it's so subtle. You can see the cheating propensity. You can see how the senses are imperfect, but we identify with that. And at least for myself and many others that I see, that's a hard struggle, how to become free from that. So even though we hear very attentively about, apparently attentively, on what are the different stages, like a doshvara, sadasanga, bhajana, kriya. So we're practicing our bhajan, and if you're practicing it correctly, then these anarthas, they start to silhouette. You start to be able to have enough light behind them from your hearing to see what they are. These are the dark spots. Silhouette is like a shadow with light behind it, so you can see it. Like with 4:29:69, the verse about that maybe I'll look that up. I don't know if anybody knows that offhand, but it shouldn't take me long to get it. I've found this quite useful. I'll try this one. 4:29:69. What's going on here? Oh, sorry. Where it says, Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that a devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. So you get to see everything just like Krishna's explained to us in the Bhagavad Gita. And then it continues, such observation is not always possible, but it becomes manifest exactly like the dark planet known as Rahu, which is observed in the presence of the full moon. So, of course, that's a bit tricky the way it's stated here, and you have to think about that. Krishna gives you hints for you to take in, and only when you add a specific element that you have to add. Krishna can give you all the instructions, he can give you everything, but there's something on your side that you have to add in order to get it to work. I think it's called surrender. That we can expand on that a little bit. So in this, it's talking about why you don't see it like that. It's not always possible to see. And what is blocking us from seeing that? Those are called material desires. And you have 1, 2, 3, how many material desires are unlimited. However, sometimes because of studying Srila Prabhupada's books, you come to another stage. It's different from the Jnanamoya stage. It's called the Vijnanamoya stage. And the Vijnanamoya, Prabhupada would always say, is science. He would always translate Vijnana as science. And it's also quite similar to the Sambandha Abhideya. So the Sambandha gives you all this information. But then when you apply it by adding surrender, you go through this transformational stage of Abhideya or Vijnana. And instead of seeing one material desire, another material desire, which are always keeping you very busy, you now have a place to stand separate, which is called, I like to refer to it as the intelligence that Krishna has given you. And when you're standing or seeing things, like in this verse, constant associating with the Supreme Person of Godhead, So how do we constantly associate? Either the holy name or his Shastric presence through his Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. It's giving us another environment. And in that environment, one material desire, instead of seeing 1, 2, 3, 10, 50 material desires, you see it as one unit, as material desires. And instead of going, seeing the forest through the trees, now you're above it enough to group all your material desires as one unit, material desires. And then you deal with it as one unit. Material desires means fruit of activities, means sense gratification, means the bodily conception of life, means the false ego, it means samsara, it means asat, temporary. You deal with the whole unit as one thing, and that's called transcendental. Now you're above it instead of in it, and you can deal with it. And at that point, there's another nice verse. It would have been good to have it. It's in the third or fourth canto where Prabhupada explains in a purport, he says, after a person is refreshed by Krishna consciousness, he consults the activities of his mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, and decides whether he should continue on in Krishna consciousness or go back to material life. So this is a stage that one goes through that, like for the pious types of person, one of them is curious. I wonder what this is about. Oh, it's about loving Krishna, about coming free from material. And then he sees everything. He says, oh, now I understand. His curiosity part is understood. So unless at that point he becomes he actually learns Vasudeva Sarvamiti, becomes a Mahatma, he can retreat from the progress in devotional service. But if he continues on, he gets this vision where he can actually see, and then that most essential item, like today during, it was a nice kirtan at the temple, and Seshi is in the back, and sometimes I talk to him, and I was saying, like, Krishna is giving us everything. What is it that we have to add to it to get it to work? You know, what is it, what's our part? And he says, you have to add yourself. You know, you have to put in your conscious understanding. So in, as I made that point earlier about this conscious chanting or conscious Bhagavatam, we have to understand, first of all, like our identity, who it is that we're identified with, what it is that I'm trying to achieve by spending this hour on the Srimad Bhagavatam class, and how am I going to make progress? The element that I have to work on for me to make progress, because sometimes I think, for instance, if someone gives you a four tires, and then they give you the axles, and they give you a motor and a transmission, clutch, seats, and they give you a whole basket of parts, and they just kind of drop it off, and you say, what's this pile of stuff? You say, it's a car. You say, well, of course, you get stuff nowadays from Walmart, and it comes some assembly required, made in China, some assembly required. So we're given all these parts on how to control the mind, what the intelligence is, how to surrender, and now some assembly is required to bring us to the conscious level of recognizing what we're doing, what it is that's actually going on. And then after you put the car all together, and certainly that's quite an achievement, you have to start it and then drive it. So there's all these different stages. We're given all these different parts to assemble in our consciousness and to get them to move us out of this material nature. First, we just have to, like when you open up your parts list, when you get your bookcase, it says, here's all the parts, you know, that there should be 10 of these screws and 15 of these nails and 8 of these boards. And it said, here's the tools you'll need, a hammer, a screwdriver, a pair of pliers. And you have all that stuff, and then you have to put it together. So the same way in this Krishna consciousness, we have all those different parts. And I would think if we had the eyes to see what it looks like, some of the ways we put this together, you know, if we didn't turn the page carefully to know what it was supposed to look like, that some of our ways that we're putting this Krishna consciousness together may not be the perfected stage of what it's supposed to look like. It may be that because of one interest or another, we're not putting it together exactly correct. And then we say, well, the car never started. You know, well, look where you put the transmission in the trunk, you know. Anyway, so if we engage like that, then we can. And then, of course, who is it that tells us to focus? This final focus is Rupa Goswami, where he explains it in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, is that it has pure devotional service has to be free. This on database just crashed. So. On recognizing what a fruit of activity is. And so you have to know what it is so you can give it up. Just like what was the other day on chapter 14, text 1, now declare to you the supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, by knowing which the sages have obtained the supreme perfection. So on that modes of nature that we were, that was a discussion there. If you think about that, it's so you know what devotional service it has to be free from, how deep this these modes of nature run, but that's what you have to be free from. So it gives such a elaborate way for you to develop your helplessness, the condition that Krishna, unless you unless we work together on this, I cannot do it by myself, and you can't do it by yourself. Krishna, he can give you the mercy. And sometimes we see great, great devotees that have such wonderful opportunities. They have some difficulty. Like, of course, one of the favorite ones is you got to actually meet Lord Chaitanya. Imagine how ecstatic that would be. And then he said you could travel with him, just you and Lord Chaitanya. And then it was evening time, and it's time to take a little rest. And you go over to the next village where the gypsies are having. That's such a bizarre thing. So how that can happen? So Lord Chaitanya, of course, went and saved him, sent him to take care of his mother. But Krishna Das, I think. So at the same time, we need to take this mercy that we're understanding here. Maharaj Yudhisthira setting an example. Looks like an ordinary event, getting some money. Everybody needs money, gets money. But what he's doing is such a perfect example of, you know, pleasing Krishna, doing it, everything that he does is such a perfect example of how to deal with that, where if we were given too much money, then the first thing is generally our standard of living goes up. People have a nicer car and a nicer different things like that. Or they, but here we see Maharaj Yudhisthira and how his brothers felt what he wanted to do and fully support him because they know it was the best thing to do. So we also can refine our intelligence to understand what is the best thing to do. And if we're not doing that, we can start to review or see our material desire silhouette. It's hard to do because we like to feel that we're doing everything right. And it's a little tricky, but when you can do that, then you can offer prayers exactly from where you are with full knowledge to Krishna. And of course, I've been noticing when you address Krishna, you address the aspect that you're needing help with. You're asking for his assistance. Like sometimes you think about mercy. Well, Krishna, you're certainly very merciful, but Lord Chaitanya, you're even more merciful because of the influence of Radharani. But then Krishna's Lord Chaitanya's brother, Lord Nityananda, he's serving Krishna. So since Krishna in the mood of Radharani is Lord Chaitanya, then who's giving out mercy to everybody, then Lord Nityananda is even more merciful. So you approach Lord Nityananda to ask for that mercy, and of course we understand you get the mercy of Lord Nityananda by approaching the Jughais and Mudhais. And then how do you know if you get the mercy? Then your material desires go away. Or if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention, you develop the urge to hear that, then Krishna assists. And he replaces it. What to replace your thinking of sense gratification with is sacrifice, Harinam. Going out, doing more street chanting to please Krishna. Because suppose you don't please Krishna. Suppose you don't. And what happens, you know, if you could get more material life or material sin, you'll be engaged in sinful activity. If end of that Bhagavad Gita, if you don't act according to my directions and don't hear me, you're still going to engage in fighting because it's your nature. So if you don't engage in Krishna conscious, you'll be engaged in sinful activity, which means you're going to suffer. So even out of, you have to be wherever we're at, but when I think about suffering, I see people always getting in difficult situations or diseases, or and this place is horrible. And you see things happen to people and you think, oh, you know, that's intolerable. How would it, if something happened like that? So there's some fear that at least Krishna, if you're pleased with me, I'll have intelligence how to deal with these kind of things if they happen. And then you just refine it more and more, but you have to capture where you are to be conscious to see where how this verse applies to me. You know, not just for repeating it, but how wealth applies to me, how using my time applies for me, how getting the satisfaction of other people applies to me. And without that, then the default is just sense gratification, animal life. And nobody's pleased with that. Even the senses aren't pleased, and you're not pleased. So that was a couple of the things that I picked out on this verse that I remembered to say. And I didn't look at really at my notes because I'm a little tired today. I did find this one part, if you have a question, but I'll just read this one part I thought was so nicely written. It says, judgment and discrimination come from our side, but our progress depends on the favor of the higher side. It must have that connection. So surrender is required. Then the Lord will approach us and take us up to the higher plane. Somehow, if we have to persuade the higher authority, to favor us. We must invite the higher authority to accept us. It does not depend so much on our own ability, but on our submission and surrender, our hankering for mercy. Not our positive capacity, but our negative character, our surrender. As a subject, I cannot make the infinite the object of my discrimination. He is always the super subject. I cannot make God the object of my discrimination. He is the super subjective. My position, my attitude must invite the higher authority to come down to my level and help me. Favor me. Real discrimination or knowledge should take us to self-surrender. Surrender is necessary to attract the attention of the Lord. Everything depends on his sweet will. He is an autocrat. His sweet will is everything. To attract his sweet will, to increase our negative side, our tendency for surrender, to attract his favor. This will be our real position if we want to progress in spiritual life and to attract the Lord's attention. All of our qualifications must be of a negative character. We shall require surrender, submission, and humility. Then we can press our position by praying, Oh my Lord, I am in the worst need. Without your grace, I cannot stand. I am helpless. I cannot endure without your favor. That sort of hankering, earnestness, and necessity for his mercy will help us in other words, we are to improve our negative character, and in that way we shall attract the positive Krishna. So I'll take any questions or comments. If you're wondering where that's from, that was from a book called Subjective Evolution of Consciousness, The Play of the Sweet Absolute by Swami B.R. Sridhar Maharaj.
Okay, Prabhu, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, as far as I know, at this time, everybody is unmuted on free conferencing. So, whatever platform you're on here, if you have any questions or comments, go ahead at this time.
It's almost humorous where Prabhupada says, you can go look for this gold peak if you want, if you're an adventurer.
And Pushkar knows somebody who did that, who went looking for it. I think he got arrested or something, but he knew the devotee's name and stuff like that, so it actually happens. They read it and went out there to try to find it.
I wonder if they could, anyway, whatever. With satellite technology, you know, if they can they can do some sort of infrared or some sort of mineral search in the Himalayas.
Well, that may get that sannyasi who's in debt out of debt. He's a geologist, isn't he? Bhakti Charu Maharaj maybe suggests that to him to use his airplane to find that and get the money that he needs.
Oh, really? He's in debt.
$7 million only.
Oh, from doing the movies?
No, not from that. That was a business that didn't work.
Oh, okay.
But it was geology where he has an airplane to find things like that, so that would be right up his alley.
Mm.
I'll suggest it.
Okay.
In this verse, it's nice that Krishna is being addressed as Achyuta, the infallible Lord, because he always guides his devotees and provides whatever they need. Like here we have Maharaj Yudhisthir, who I like that how Prabhupada uses this word, that he had hearty wishes to perform a sacrifice. You know, it's like if you're hungry, you know, you just can't wait to eat. Like, so he had a hearty wish to perform the sacrifice. And then Lord Krishna is Achyuta, so he provided whatever Maharaj Yudhisthir needs. And we really see that Srila Prabhupada, when he went to look at the temple in Detroit, I think I said this before, but anyway, it's well worth saying it again. The person that owned the Fisher Mansion in Detroit after Lawrence Fisher died, his name was Groen. He was he had a lot of money, but not sufficient to really keep that house going. You know, if you have a big estate, it takes a lot of money to keep it going. It's astonishing. You know, you got to be wealthy just to keep a big house like that. So So he was hoping he could sell it, and because a slum had grown up around it over the years, it was really hard for him to get it off of his hands. And then finally, he had a buyer. So Srila Prabhupada came personally to negotiate with this man. And after Prabhupada saw the temple, and I took him on a tour, Srila Prabhupada was being very cool. I guess that's the proper word. In other words, not revealing his intentions. And then at the end of the tour, he said, "So, it's a very nice house. You should give us this house because it's for God's service." And the man, the way Srila Prabhupada said it was so serious, with absolute conviction, the man was just like gasping. He was trying to figure out what he could say. He was almost apologizing that he couldn't give the house because it was all of his wealth. So finally they negotiated down, and I believe it was something like $200,000 or $300,000 or something like that. I'm sorry, I don't remember the figure. It was a few hundred thousand dollars, which for that estate is incredibly cheap, even back in the 70s. So,
what estate was that?
This Fisher estate, David Sapmanji, Detroit. Yeah, right. The Detroit Temple. So, wow. Yeah, the infallible Lord always leads his devotees in such a way that, you know, if they need wealth or any kind of facilities, he provides it for them, is just as long as our desire is pure. I wish I could remember the amount, but I believe it was something like between $200,000 and $300,000.
Was he an American or an Indian that's sold?
No. He was American.
Wow.
Yeah, he was an Indian man. He's just some guy.
Must have really choked. I should just hand it over.
Yeah.
Didn't Prabhupada also do that same thing with the city hall? They showed him some building, and he said, "We can stop the crime. You just have to give us."
That was in Chicago. Yeah, right across from the Chicago Temple with Lieutenant Mosley. Just before that interview, he called the representatives. He wanted to speak to the mayor, but the mayor couldn't come, so they sent a representative from the mayor's office, and he told them they should give him this building. You know, on the other side of the street, this building was like, oh, gosh, it was about, I think it was around 10 or 12 stories. You know, it was quite a large building, apartment building. And again, they were apologizing. They said they had all kinds of, you know, plans for it, what they were going to do with
it. It was the building for City Hall, the main building.
So,
bye.
Undaunted, you know, to ask for something in Krishna service.
Guru Maharaj, you know, the great king. He actually just has that abhay, that fearlessness. Who can say that with conviction, you know? Wonderful. Thank you very much for allowing me to say something. I hope it was something you could use in some way or another.
Excuse me for interrupting. I have found myself in college again taking evolutionary psychology, and I think I might be able to use some quotes from that book. Did you say it was B.R. Sridhar Swami?
Yeah.
And what was the name of the book?
It's called Subjective Evolution of Consciousness.
And is it available like at Krishna Culture?
I can give it to you, Maharani.
Okay, thank you. And that was a great class. And I think children are like the senses. They're just never satisfied.
That's funny.
It's true.
Guardian of Devotion, instance from San Jose, so...
Thank you.
appreciate the opportunity to say something about Krishna and Prabhupada.
If no one else has anything to say, I can just make one more announcement. I mentioned this the other day that I've been corresponding with Sri Dayananda Maharaj, and he's on board 3 weeks from now to give this a seminar on atheism, how to defeat atheism. So I just put up the flyer for that. I'll just read up a little bit more about it. He's going through various arguments right now. We're just kind of focusing in on how many of these arguments he wants to go through during the seminar. So if you got any challenges, now's time to sharpen up your wits, because, you know, he's really, really good at defeating various arguments. So looking forward to that. That's on the 22nd.
Is he going to bring his own arguments, or is it going to depend on us to ask him? Or?
I gave him a list of the most common atheistic arguments.
Could you send that list to us too?
I'm going to, what I did is I gave him 16 different arguments, and I asked him to choose maybe out of a dozen out of those that we can cover within an hour, and then I'll leave another half hour for general questions. So as soon as he gets...
How'd you get the list?
I just started doing research, compiling what I could, and I found the best arguments out there.
So. It's a big movement now, atheism. It's actually, they're starting to target American mainstream. You know, a country that was founded, one nation under God, in God we trust, they're trying to change that. They're targeting that to be that American can be, you know, you can be a good American and be an atheist.
Well, you know, the thing is that actually atheism is so pervasive, because even if people say that they're religious, actually, the dogma is, the real religion is scientific understanding, you know, which is completely atheistic. Even if they call themselves religious, they just know it's sentiment. You know, they just want to say
it. You know, Richard Dawkins, it's famous for this God Delusion book. He just came out with another book. I just saw Wall Street Journal did a review on it, and it's called The Magic of Reality, and he's describing what science knows about earthquakes and this thing and that thing. All they can do is measure things, and they step out of bounds when they try to get into philosophy or the reason why or what's behind it. But this man, he's specifically targeting Christianity, but he's trying to break the faith of anybody that, you know, has any kind of religious inclination. And he contrasts science with what he calls mythology and cute stories, or, you know, and he takes, of course, the things that work well for his contrast. But this is serious. They're aggressive, and Prabhupada was not... you know, he knew the scientists were one of the big problems. And this Richard Dawkins, he's aggressive. He's very actively trying to recruit more atheists.
Yeah, I happen to be here, you know, visiting my parents. And you hear the TV going off, you know, like all day. And any documentaries, news, just about anything on TV, potato. They're always quoting science, and what's all pervasive is evolution and the Big Bang Theory. You know, where's the room for God in there? They're trying to prove we don't need any so-called God. So I think that this is very important. I'm looking forward to it. Seminar. We need to have really solid...
Oh, this book, by the way, is targeted to children or younger. You know, he's trying to get, you know, He knows what he's doing, and it's horrible.
But Putanas, he's representing in the Putana Sampradaya. He's looking, trying to look attractive and approach them when they're very young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When is the seminar again?
3 weeks from now, 22nd Saturday, 3 weeks from now, right after Jamani finishes his series.
Well, that's Ekadasi.
Oh, is it really? Ekadasi. Oh, okay.
This Friday's also Ekadasi.
Right.
Well, thank you, Madan Mohan Prabhu.
Jai, all glories of Prabhupada.
Jai, thank you, Prabhu.
Jai.
Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Jai.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.